Chapter 3. Man.
It's 11:59 p.m. New Year's Eve. The door swings open and in walks. That's right, bitches! Walks! The most incredible creature anyone has ever seen. Upright, hairless, with a frontal lobe that screams high cognitive functioning, this strange being moves in, redecorates the joint, and eats half the guests before the ball drops. Yeah, boy! Homo sapiens in the house! If the chronology of life on Earth were compressed into a year, humanity would have been around for only that final minute. But in that time, we managed to domesticate dogs, clone sheep, and kill off more species of arthropod than we could shake a stick at. You know, the stick we were holding in our now free-to-grasp hand. So how about a nice round of applause for man, the evolutionary wunderkind? Good morning, Earth's creatures, and topo the food chain to you. Though our intellectual and spiritual prowess far outpaced that of all other organisms, I'm going to be honest here, we were not perfect. Our abilities could be exercised only within the confines of our own bodies. Now, on the off chance that you exist as amorphous vapors floating immaterially in space, bodies were portable, individual-sized carrying cases for the soul. Every human being was given exactly one such body at the moment of conception, so you could see why we would encase them in a thick, protective layer of fat. Now, our bodies had their virtues, durability, the capacity for self-healing, and extraordinary pieces of bioengineering, like a hands, eyes, the upper left quadrant of the clitoris. But for the most part, they were our weak spot. We were neither the fastest animal, that was the cheetah, nor the largest, that was the blue whale, nor the tallest, the giraffe, nor the prettiest, that was a tie, butterflies and well-groomed cocker spaniels. Yet we ruled over all of them. Why? Well, perhaps this riddle will shed some light. What has 3 pounds, 4 lobes, and just came up with the idea for guns? Yes, the brain was our big dog. A dense collection of neurons and their transmitters, it allowed for a level of functioning other fauna could only respond reflexively to direct stimuli about. Its relationship with the body could at times be fraught. Often, no sooner would the mind begin to scale the heights of Mount Knowledge than it would receive a frantic call from Body Base Camp, demanding it return to oversee Operation Masturbate. We actually devoted the majority of our time and energy to satisfying our body's needs, wants, whims, tantrums, and crippling addictions. To the mind, the body was the loud, leaky, high-maintenance apartment it was forced to live in simply because it had nowhere else to crash. But consider it from the body's perspective. From the neck down, the human animal would just as soon have been left alone with its instincts. Eating, sleeping, copulating, immediately sleeping again. These were natural functions that needed no input from upper management. Yet, to justify its job, Mr. Thinks-a-Lot had to constantly butt in with his doubts and diets and insufferable quests for meaning. To the body, the mind was a totalitarian dictator monitoring every aspect of its personal life, its eating, its breathing, its sexual habits, even when and in what room of the house it could defecate. This mind-body tension was the maddening core of our existence, but it was also remarkably productive. In some ways, their relationship was like that of the mismatched pairs of law enforcement officials whose misadventures constitute a significant portion of the television artifacts you will soon be finding. Yes, they were different, but it was those very differences that led them to success and ultimately a kind of grudging mutual respect. Homo sapiens may have been set apart from all other life on Earth by its intelligence. But only in conjunction with our physical selves was this intelligence able to adapt to its conditions, change its environment, and bend the world to its will for the greater good of everyone. The end result is the now lifeless hellscape you see before you.